Welcome to the Practice Podcast, conversations probing the nature of practice. I'm your host, Dave Fearon, co-author with Peter Vale of the digital book on practice as a way of being. Find it at mylibrary.world. And now to our show. Discussion Partners Collaborative, founder Tom Casey. Just keep chasing Tom, chasing him, saying, Tom, tell me what's going on out there in the world since I'm isolated living here in northwestern Connecticut, and I never disappointed. So welcome, Tom.
Thank you so much, David. It's nice to be back. And I think that, you know, it's amazing because no matter how secluded one thinks they are living, okay, they can't escape the barrage of news.
No.
And the you know, I mean, here we are, we're on April 28th, and the big topics today, okay, let's forget Iran. Let's forget, you know, the cost of living if you drive by a gas station or you have to stop by and get some eggs. And let's worry about what King Charles says to Congress, whether Jimmy Fallon is going to be fired. Okay. And what prompted the First Lady to come out and say she had nothing to do with Epstein. Now, these are the things that are on my mind, you know, that, you know, what's happened is we've been really distracted by the news. As reprehensible as the potential assassination attack on anybody, the reaction to that only fuels my, oh, come on, reaction when the insulter-in-chief starts talking about a ballroom and wanting Fallon to be taken off the air for what I granted was probably a tasteless joke that preceded the event on Saturday. And, you know, I can remember we doing a podcast where we were both appalled at the humor that was associated with Paul Pelosi getting a hammer to the head.
That's right.
Our president, you know, president of all people here, just thought that this was the most hysterical thing that he had seen that weekend. So I think that, you know, I mean, what's happening, David, and I'm reverting back to, you know, less sarcasm and more what our clients are saying. And I feel the need to drop back and regroup a little bit about some of the things we began talking about last fall and fast forward them to where we are now.
That sounds great. Yeah.
And going back in, back around Labor Day, as we discussed before on a previous podcast and have discussed offline, is we began, we being the discussion partners, began sensing that clients were, you know, a little bit shell-shocked with the geopolitical and economic chaos. Starting with the tariffs, going through DOGE, okay, and with the visibility of these Ninja Turtles pulling people off the streets, okay, in particularly cruel ways. We, being the partnership, we developed a checklist of six E's that you and I talked about. There was the economy. These were the things that we said, please monitor those because any one of these could blow up. Okay. And whatever your planning is, you need to pay attention to these six things because they're going to be problems. One was the Epstein files. We could not understand why Britain was going after their people, but our folks were saying there were no files. Second is the economy. Okay, the because we began to sense that the promises made about economic stability were not good. The other one, you know, I'll pick a couple more that I think are the most emblematic of where we are, is we were looking at the employees, what we call the employees, which were essentially the people put in charge of our institutions.
Yeah.
The cabinet, the FBI, okay, et cetera. And the other one that was added to the list later was enemies. Because when the president was coming in saying that this was going to be retribution, he certainly had to have been taken seriously. And as recently as today, former Vice FBI Director Comey has been indicted again.
Oh,
Okay, and the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, who the federal prosecutor, Brennan, basically said there's no there there, and got fired, and they'll probably indict him again, too. Powell, they withdrew the indictment to get the new guy in because the senator from North Carolina, I believe his name was Tillis, wasn't going to vote for anybody until this was resolved. So, you know, the chaotic world, okay, is surrounding us, but I'm really worried about Jimmy Fallon. You know, go figure. Now, going from September, what we saw, and it was really influenced by a Harvard Business Review article that focused on a concept called strategic hibernation, which is what was consistent with us, which is we have no idea what's happening. It's too fluid. Okay, so be advised, monitor closely. And with the events in Minnesota, it was almost like a wake-up call to the commercial sector. And what it precipitated was, okay, I'm sick of sitting on the sidelines hoping there'll be some type of structure and order here, okay? And people started saying, I'm going to do something just for the sake of doing something. Okay, and we heard that. What we did is, you know, we consultants, thank God we can contradict ourselves and come up with alternative methodologies. So instead of being cautious, we said, okay, well, think about it this way. And we came up with a concept called intentionality. And the first area of intentionality was that a good portion of our population, David, are ex-military. And, you know, there's a concept there is that you can never retreat your way to victory. So what we were saying is, whatever you choose to do in terms of a strategic intent, okay, monitor its impact, okay, and be prepared to say it's not working and get out as fast as possible. So all you leave yourself an exit strategy or the null hypothesis. We were also in the strategic area, we were saying subtraction is the new addition. In other words, the things you stopped doing were as legitimate as a strategic intent as the things you started doing. Okay. Then we moved into the second area of intentionality, which is now is a really good time to start determining whether or not the people, particularly in the leadership chairs, but overall as well, are the people that you want to have around you during these chaotic times and or you want to have around you after.
Yeah, okay. That's a damn good question.
One of the things we used as a as an example, okay, because now you began seeing, you know, secretaries of Homeland Security, the Attorney General fired. But the one that really caught our attention, well, and you know, I don't even want to go postal here on the 30 07s and above that the Secretary of Defense has taken out in a time of war, but and concentrating on minorities and women, you know, so you can draw your own conclusions about that. But the other part here is the director in Homeland Security for one of the principal security offices resigned in protest when the Iran war starts. And he basically, he's a former Green Beret, very conservative, very Trumper, but he said, you know, this was the wrong thing to do for the wrong reasons. And what you found was, and then Trump's reaction was, well, he didn't know a lot about security. Then what the hell was he doing in the job in the first place? But our favorite is the dude in FEMA who brags about being teleported to a Waffle House. And he's now worried and focusing on disaster relief. So the second area of intentionality, unless you like Waffle Houses, well, everybody does, unless you feel the need to be teleported to one, now would be a good time to take a look at your staff and ask and answer the question, are these the dudes and dudettes that you want surrounding you as we navigate this chaos? Because it's not getting any more clear, particularly with the Iran war. And the other one, and this is where we struggled a little bit because the people had a hard time internalizing it, is we were saying to our clients, now's a really good time to think selfishly. You know, you've been so preoccupied by asking the questions about your enterprises, okay, and your staff. Okay, I really want to concede that they're worried about, you know, how their staff are doing during these difficult times. And so we're saying, that's all well and good. You can be the most compassionate and supportive leader, et cetera, provided, one, you are holding people to high expectations. And second is, you're giving some thought in terms of your own career trajectories and what makes you happy, what keeps you engaged, what keeps you enthusiastic. And, you know, we will say, think selfishly, which people will pull back, and we say, no, let's frame what we mean by selfishly. Don't think stupidly and leave your own desires, expectations, and aspirations on the table. Factor that into the equation in terms of how you're thinking about this.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thought leader that we've referenced that I have had a relationship with in the past, Dr. Linda Gratton. And she writes.
Oh, yeah.
She's at the London Business School.
Yep.
Prolific author. And she writes about, you know, aging as a process and the think about living for 100 years. Okay. And she's written several books on this. And the reality is, you know, I'm 76, you're
85.
Yeah. You know, and we're still going strong, we're still in the game. There's nothing that says, unless we get hit by a truck tonight, that we are going to go quietly.
Okay? That's true.
So Dr. Gratton's basically saying, assume that you're going to be around for a while. What makes you happy? And that influenced what we were talking about to our executives, saying, think selfishly. So my conclusion, okay, since the last time we talked, is, you know, irony rules. In terms of how we're looking at the world, there's some very serious problems. For example, we just wrote an op-ed on immigration, which seems to have gotten lost as a priority.
Yeah, I saw that. That was, we're talking about immigration. That was last week.
Yeah, exactly. Week. Well, when was it? Was in the last time it was serious consideration? Okay, is in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And it's going to have to be revisited because part of the funding for ICE has been withheld. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the reality is going to resurface, but it's going to be resurfaced by funding in ICE, whereas our position is the whole damn system is broken. Why can't we fix that?
Yeah.
You know,
as that bill that was written by both parties back when Biden was still president.
Biden's bill did make it through, but there was one that was just terrific.
Yeah.
And the author of that bill was a very conservative senator from
Ohio. Yeah, that's what I'm remembering.
Yeah, he was very conservative. And, you know, he did the best he could, and then the president killed it because he wanted immigration to be one of the platforms, both planks for his re-election campaign.
Yeah,
but the one that had the most comprehensive to me, okay, was the one that Senator Kennedy co-created with then President Bush. Okay. Two gentlemen who didn't agree on a lot.
Yeah, that's
okay,
true.
Okay, but they came up with something that if we had followed it, we wouldn't need be having people protesting no internment camps in my community. Okay. You know, I mean those are the things we've been kind of reduced to.
It's come to that. Yeah.
It has. But the thing is that one of the things that gives us optimism in our discussions with people is two things, really. One is I think people are basically resilient. Okay. I think that people basically bounce back. They bounce back from personal trauma. They bounce back from economic trauma, career trauma. I think they have the resilience to bounce back from autocratic potential trauma. Okay, so that's one. But the other thing is what we're seeing, and I credit the No Kings issues here as a visible manifestation of that, is we're starting to see silence as complacency.
Yeah.
Okay? And more people are speaking out, or they're shutting up.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, I'll take it. All right. But when you have people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, okay, speaking on behalf of the Epstein victims who have been really taken advantage of.
Oh, yeah.
And those, the three women congresspeople, Nancy Mace, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Lauren Boebert, three women who I have nothing in common with, did the right thing at the right time. They sensitized people to get this bill through.
Yep.
And eventually people are going to have to be accountable because that there is a bill there.
Yep. There's a law and there's consequences. Yep. There's so much you've said, Tom, that swirls in my head.
Well, as you can tell, I'm drinking an espresso. You know, I'll take a big gulp and get going again.
Please do. I'll talk a minute so you can sip. I'm still picturing really tens of thousands of small to medium businesses and a goodly number of large corporations based here in this country and more or less led by Native Americans who you know, been here their whole lives and they've risen to that point of responsibility. Now, your point to them is, okay, time to be selfish. But I wonder if all that conditioning with consultants and books and everyone saying you've got to look after your people, you've got to look out for, you know, you're there to protect the business, all that. If they can actually make that switch, in, at least in their heads, and say, well, what about me?
There's a title of a book. It's by Noel Tichy from the University of Michigan back in the 90s. Now, it was written on another, for another reason, but the title is what resonates with us. Control Your Destiny or Somebody Else Will.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And the title is what we are suggesting. We're not saying disregard the strategy or certainly disregard the associates associated with. What we are saying is don't forget yourself.
Yeah, because no one else right now is, you know, in a way, right. you know, no one's hovering around you to see if you're still handling your CEO-ship or your presidency or your COO job.
It goes a little deeper than that because the CEOs can legitimately say, well, the administration isn't worried about us either, so we've got to worry about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for example, the farming industry. It's going to get crushed with the cost of fertilizer. Okay, that's assuming they can get any.
I know.
All right. And, you know, we can throw money at you know, we're really good at throwing money at problems we created. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that I find fascinating is Lancet did a study in February. There will be 9 million people who will have lost their lives because of the cut to aid. By 2030.
Mm.
Okay. Now, I'm former military. I understand that asymmetrical warfare relies heavily on air and surface-to-air missiles, drones, bombardments, et cetera, et cetera. But the billions of dollars were spent in Iran.
Ugh.
Okay. And concomitant to depletion of our material armament reserves. And all we're seeing is increase in prices, and the Iranians, who really do know how to negotiate, basically holding us hostage because the Strait of Hormuz, which was open before we got involved, is now closed and is killing everybody. Not killing everybody. It's impacting everybody.
And do they think that they're negotiating with anyone but Donald Trump? Because that's the way this war has been run.
There's a saying that's ascribed to the Taliban, okay, when Russia finally backed up. And it was also said about the coalition forces that went in after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, you have the watch, but we have the time.
Yeah.
And this is where I think the Iranians are doing it, because they're not fools. I mean, first off, they're the people in charge there. They don't care about polls, if they even do them, about what people think. You know, their principle is to promote their idea of a theocracy supported by the Iranian Republican Guard and survive.
Yeah.
Okay. And continue with the status quo. That's their priority. How many of their citizens get hurt in the meantime is of secondary importance, if at all.
Okay. Yeah.
And they know that, but they know that's not what we're being held accountable for.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, we can't see President Trump say the war has already been won and will be over soon. Okay. And we can't see Hegseth saying, you know, bombing is our negotiation. And how many times can we extend the ceasefire?
Yeah.
I think the third rail here that a lot of people are worried about, I think they're less worried. But I think that because when it does come up, when Iran comes up in our conversations, is will we ever put boots on the ground? I just don't see that. And the amount of forces we have in the Gulf sounds like a lot, but not to invade and control a country of 92 million people.
So it's all spread around too.
Sure.
Well, you know, Israel put boots on the ground in Gaza, mm-hmm. but that was just like going across the street.
Right.
And but I can't imagine Israel, even though it's led by someone almost, if not as crazy as our president, is that they would send their own troops over there. They might send them over to Lebanon so they can grab a little territory, but they just were lobbying rhetoric across the water. You know, Netanyahu, they're evil, 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 and now some weapons, but not. I doubt if they put as many up in the air as we did. They sucked us right in, or not us, but our leader.
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, we need to separate the Israeli Defense Force from Netanyahu, and we need to separate the Israeli people even more from the other two. Because if I was living in Israel, you're always under constant threat.
Yep.
Okay, that becomes part of your DNA. And, you know, after October 7th, you're not going to be able to explain to anybody that don't worry about it. Okay. So the definition of worrying about it is you look at the wisdom of the Israeli government and the prowess of the Israeli Defense Forces. Israeli Defense Forces are really very, very good. Okay. You know, and some of the things they do, just like the Ukrainians have been doing with drones, some of the things you watch the IDF do that we're doing in Lebanon, where pagers were blowing up and things like that, you say, hey, geez, this is really fascinating how they do asymmetrical warfare. Now, Netanyahu, his motives, he's influenced by the right-leaning part of his government. Plus, he's influenced also by his own biases. He thought that he testified before our U.S. Congress criticizing the Iran nuclear deal. Now, that deal looks real good to a lot of people right now.
Yeah.
Okay, with Senator Kerry and the woman who negotiated it, Wendy Sherman. Mm-hmm. And the people who were criticizing the deal was because it was only about nuclear.
Yeah.
And it left proxy wars. It left armaments, conventional armaments. It left funding for terrorist groups like Hamas, like Hezbollah, like the Houthis, okay, off the table. But that's not what they were negotiating. They were negotiating nuclear. And now our administration is saying the priority is to make sure Iran is never going to get a nuclear weapon.
Mm.
How's that work?
Yeah.
You know, supposedly it was bombed into oblivion back in June, And now I think there was a recent interview, maybe on Fox, where the president said that they would have had a bomb and used it in 2 weeks. And yeah, it's very hard to, and this goes back to what we're talking about, the relationship we have with our commercial clients. You know, you can't do this concept whack-a-mole, okay, where, you know, it's this thing, that thing, another thing, and feel that the person is worthy of trust.
Oh, God, no.
And we used to reference, David, that there was an old Saturday Night skit called Hello, Trudy.
No, I don't remember that one.
It was a television show. Jim Belushi was the host. And he has on a guest. And the name of the show is Hello, Trudy, because Trudy was the only person watching the show.
It's a great premise.
And what I'm seeing right now is that the administration is well on their way to reducing themselves to only Trudy paying attention. Because nobody else, unless they're just chosen to blindly go along. Everybody we're dealing with on the commercial thing is questioning, well, why did they do this? Why did they do the war? Why did they do the tariffs? Why did they put these people in charge? What are they going to do about the economy? And they're not getting answers. They're getting, you know, it's like an echo chamber. They're getting reverberation in terms of what they're trying to get.
They're speaking to themselves in a way, because they're not getting hurt. Well, we don't have a federal government right now that's built to listen. And,
I'm sorry, David, interrupt you.
I was just going to say, I remember one of your lists where the top item that people did not trust, of course, was hypocrisy.
Right.
But it was starting to blossom back when that one came up in our podcast. Right. But now it's like, maybe who's going to listen to these? They lie about their lies. And I agree. I think Trudy may be the last one to listen.
Yeah.
But what do we do with that gap? What are people doing with that gap?
Well, I'd hate to think Trudy is only Tucker Carlson and Candace audiences here, but I think that what's happening is now, and we do monitor these things, is the podcasts that are anti-Trump, that are, we'll call it that, the MAGA-oriented podcasts that are anti-Trump are getting listeners, and those that are pro-Trump, okay, are losing listeners.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's that factor. The other factor is those people who were inclined to give him the benefit of the doubt, if not support him, are disappointed. Okay, and third is, reality is that, and this, the consequence, David, is, you know, you're a professor, an esteemed professor of leadership and organization. Mm-hmm. You know Machiavelli is, quote, you know, the only first definition of success as a good leader is to have good followers.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that the president is getting the best information. As a matter of fact, the vice president essentially accused the Secretary of Defense yesterday of saying that he was not providing the correct information to the president about the status of our reserve armament.
Oh, jeez.
You know, there was an article in The Atlantic that resonated with a lot of people who focus on national security.
Hmm.
Okay. And, you know, the thing is, when we were doing the research prior to the election on what don't you want to see, hypocrisy, bias, intolerance, expediency, and aggression. That's all we've seen.
That's right. I was going to say.
You know, on a daily basis, it's one, if not all, five of these
things. Yeah.
And the thing that is circling right back to how we started this conversation is, I think we've gotten a little numb about this. If we're worried about Jimmy Fallon, okay, I mean, if that's leading the news, okay? And that's what's something that people are preoccupied by. That's because they've just been basically given up on the ability of people to step up and not be hypocritical, not be biased, be tolerant. And that's the part that is frightening. What I'm worried about is, personally, this is just me, I can't speak for my partners. What I'm worried about is the election that should show a referendum on Trump and the Republican Congress.
Yes.
Is people are so fed up, they will stay home.
Yeah. That's a lousy way to do it.
They'll just say, you know, yeah, but it happened a lot. One of the things that happened with Mrs. Clinton when she ran against Trump the first time, too many people sat home because they didn't like her.
Yeah.
Okay, same thing with Vice President Harris.
Yeah.
And what I'm worried about is people will just say, well, I'm so fed up with this.
Yeah, a pox on all their houses.
Yeah.
But the house that we need are the Democrats, and yeah, both Senate and the House, we need them to stay. But
well, let's go back to hypocrisy for a moment, because you're raising something else, the gerrymandering. Okay.
Yeah.
And this is where I'm taking some degree of solace. The, you know, when President Trump basically said to Texas, okay, I'm entitled, he used the word, I am entitled to more seats. They throw out all of the census they've just done and all of the districts they've just created and said, yes, sir. So they create seats. And I remember I lived in Texas for about a year, and there's, you know, there's so many smart and very gifted people who live in Texas. They're really terrific. But periodically, somebody shows up, usually wearing a Stetson, that makes no sense. And it was one of their legislators. And he was interviewed right around the time that the legislature, okay, voted this in. And Sam said, why are you doing this? And his words were, because we can. Now, let's fast forward to where we are right now. Okay. There's an issue here of, there's now the so can we response. California and Virginia, if it holds up in the courts, and it probably will, created new districts based on referendums. They didn't just do it in the legislature.
Oh, they did it
and
the old-fashioned way.
Indiana, which is definitely a red state, just said, no, we're happy the way it is. That's why we spent all this work on the first place. And the way that the Virginia legislature did it was brilliant. They basically said, we're going to do it for time being, and then we're going to go back to the way we had agreed to do it before. So, you know, the thing is, sometimes people just do get fed up with the hypocrisy. And, you know, you've got everybody screaming and yelling about, oh, how unfair it was to California and Virginia. And you know, there's two principles that within our community here, you can tell I'm getting agitated about this one, within our community we talk about. One is, you can never unfire a gun.
Yeah.
Okay, so do yourself a favor. Don't point and shoot unless you know what the hell you're doing. And second is the reference to the movie, The Bridge Over the River Kwai.
Oh, yeah.
Sir Alec Guinness, who's just built a bridge to help the Japanese, realizes at his expense, and his quote is, oh, my God, what have I done? There's a lot of that going on in Texas right now.
Well, those are little sheds of sun coming through. And I after hearing you talk, I am optimistic, because what I hear you say is a sort of a subtext is, you know, look beyond the crazy attention grabbing headlines, look deeper and look around you and see what's actually going on. I stood among several thousand people in a small town not very long ago for No King's Day. And that rolled up to over 8 million by count, and probably more than that. Not, and including if you go out to the Paris and London and all in Germany, they're are people out there saying, you know, we're done with this. And my hope is, if they're going to stand out there as we did in cold weather with, you know, with signs like this, they're also going to vote. And that was sort of my feeling of hope standing there is, okay, folks, let's all reconvene on November 7th and vote. And that could make a difference.
Well, no King's Day, I went to the one in Concord, Mass, and he had the Lexington Concord.
Oh, yeah, that's symbolic.
Where the revolution started. And one of the speakers was a former governor. His name was Deval Patrick.
Oh, yeah, I remember Deval.
Really a good governor, okay, had his critics. In Massachusetts, you know, no matter who we elect, we're going to yell at them. But he had, in his speech, one of the things, and I wrote it down, you know, I'll probably use it in a blog or something, is he said, you can't be great unless you're good.
I like it.
And he just, so, you know, now we're back to the blocking and tackling.
Yeah.
You know, I can assure you, David, that it's not single malt in this espresso cup. It's really espresso. But what I'm very optimistic about is the resilience. Okay. If we see people who are responsible for running companies or leading companies basically saying, okay, I'm going to embrace the horror, but I'm not going to sit on the sidelines anymore. I'm going to do something.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. That's a good sign. A No King's 8 million people showing up. The courts, okay, who I think everybody had written off as being problematic, come back and say, no, dude, the tariffs are illegal. You owe a lot of people a lot of money.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a book that recently came out by a court watcher, and it's something that we're starting to pay attention to because people just ask us, like they ask you, they ask me, what do you think?
Yeah, okay. What do you think?
You know, and you go, no, you know, no effing clue is really not what you want to say. But there's a way to think about the court that's really actually interesting. There's, instead of a 6-3, it's a 3-3-3. Okay, you have the very far left, right wing, and the very far left wing. Okay, but you do have three people in the middle: Justice Roberts, the newest Justice Amy Coney Barrett, and Kavanaugh. Okay, who have surprised everybody with, they seem to be focusing on the Constitution more than they are on the law, more than on the political influence.
Yeah.
And if
that would be giving me some hope to see that Supreme Court supreme again.
we did a deeper dive on some of the lesser visible rulings of the Supremes, not the, you know, one that I'm really following now, the birthright citizenship, going back to immigration, but the less controversial ones. These guys are, you know, some of these, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh in particular, and certainly Roberts, are joining the quote-unquote liberal judges much more frequently than people are aware.
It gives me hope.
We'll see.
Well, Tom, oh my goodness. We probably tested our listeners' patience, but they couldn't stop listening either. But I do think probably we should say... we've put a lot in the air, you and me, particularly you, and a lot to think about, a lot to watch. And I would say in conclusion, that resilience, the last thought you gave us, is the thing that we can hope for in each of us as individuals, but also as communities, and take it all the way out to the state and nation. And watch for signs of that. Watch for people who had tape over their mouth when they signed in to be Republican senators or representatives who are now taking the tape off and speaking. That's a sign that they're actually finding some bounce in themselves, all the way to the usual, I'm looking at youth, young people, voting age 18 to about 23. That's that group there. If they aren't resilient, we're doomed. I mean, if they haven't learned how to bounce and sort of bounce and yield and weave to get forward in their lives. But I think they have, and I think that could be a force. So we got lots to talk about the next time, Tom. In the meantime, what do you have as your last thought?
The last thought, I'm sorry to interrupt you again, David.
No, no, no.
The last thought on intentionality, where we're talking about things selfishly.
Okay.
We extrapolate that and tease it out in our discussions when people want to talk about politics at the same time. And our advice to them is, you can't really think selfishly without taking a stand about what's going on around you. Because you owe it to yourself.
That's right.
To advocate for a solution. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you may be happy. You can advocate and say everything's perfect if you want. Or we don't hear a lot of that. But
I don't hear it.
Well, we do hear it. We do hear it. Or you take a stand, okay? Cold Boston day, I think it was, I can't remember how many people showed up in the city of Boston, and it was freezing here. It wasn't Connecticut on the No Kings Day.
Yeah.
There's another sign of protest that I think is what monitoring worthy, David, and I don't mean to go over time here, is the people who are pushing back on the construction of these deportation centers in their communities.
Yes.
Okay. Nobody wants them.
Of course not.
Okay. You know, nobody wants them. And if they're force fed into a community, okay, I think that would be really, really a challenge for the administration. Yeah. I mean, they're not backing away from the immigration policy. I mean, Tom Harmon, who was appointed by Obama, I mean, he is very focused on immigration policy and deportation, mass deportations. He's committed to that. To the man's credit, where he's bringing some degree of discipline to these Ninja Turtles you got to see walking around with, you know, assault rifles. Mm-hmm. There are excesses still. Okay, but not like we were treated to during the month of January in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that the underlying principles of a rational or irrational immigration policy are still to be determined.
Yep. Wow. What a world. What a world. According to the Wicked Witch of the West. But thank you, Tom. Your middle name should be Enlightened.
Well, I think that my middle name is Franklin, so...
Ben.
Yeah, well, no, it's my father's. It was my father's middle name, and it was his named after his... He had an ancestor, an uncle, who was an oblate priest, Franklin.
Okay.
And Franklin Thomas Wood, and who I did get a chance to meet. But both were very thoughtful men, and they loved retail politics.
Oh, okay, Tom. Thank you again.
You take care.
This has been great.
Thank you for listening to the Practice Podcast, conversations probing the nature of practice. If you'd like to hear more, go to Podomatic, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube. And please consider purchasing our book on practice as a way of being at mylibrary.world. It's a digital book with lots of features that you do not see in a conventional book. So once again, thank you, and I look forward to your listening again.